Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Fearless Fiction. I'm your host, Bernadette Walsh. And before I introduce my guest, I just want to remind people that if you sign up for my newsletter, you will get a free book. So please sign up for my newsletter. It gives you all the information about my upcoming podcast interviews and also my books. And you can sign up for my newsletter at BernadetteWalsh.com. Also wanted to remind you that my book, Fearless Friends Forever, is on sale for a very limited time for only $1.99. It has been described as dramatic, well-written, and mesmerizing. So please pick up Friends Forever for only $1.99. And if you read it, you'll find out that you need to keep your friends close and your frenemies even closer. So this evening, I'm so pleased to introduce my guest, Corey Poirier. He's a multi-time TEDx speaker and a columnist. And now he's a fiction writer. His first book, The Enlightened Passenger, is now available. So welcome, Corey, to Fearless Fiction. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Bernadette. Thank you for having me.
Well, you have so many things to tell us about in terms of your journey of becoming a fiction writer, because obviously this is your first book, but this is not your first written material. You are a columnist and also a very well-known speaker. So maybe you can give us a little bit of background about you, and then you can tell us about why you decided to turn to fiction.
Yeah, so I have certainly written other works in the nonfiction space, and also, as you mentioned, have been speaking for years. So, you know, my background is really probably somewhat unique, and then there's probably, you know, some of it is similar to other people, but the somewhat unique is that I grew up in a small town, raised by a single mother, barely graduated high school. I got a 49 plus one in one of my classes. Didn't know the difference between fiction and nonfiction when I was a kid, when I graduated high school. And I didn't read my first book until age 27. So I think a lot of those things kind of counter the idea of writing books and speaking. It kind of goes against it. But I really had, I was very creative, had a big imagination, and I was very social. So, you know, that my background, like I say, it was a small town sort of story, I guess. And then, you know, to gloss over a lot of years, basically from that point forward, I worked in the corporate world for 10 years in sales. And then I made the transition to being a speaker, a writer, had a newspaper, did stand-up comedy. So a lot of I followed down a pretty big path after leaving school and leaving the hometown I grew up in. And then so ultimately with this book, you know, because, again, it's a lot to share in a very short amount of time because there's been a lot that's happened. But this book, how it was inspired, is I asked certain questions during my interviews, and I've interviewed now thousands of people. And one of the questions inspired me to consider this book idea. And so I had the concept, sat with it honestly for a year. I knew what I wanted the beginning and ending to be. And that was pretty much it for a year. And I, you know, I guess I knew some of the parts in between. I kind of decided on the characters in that year. But really, it was a year of zero writing, but knowing what I wanted the book to be. And my wife kept saying, you need to spend some time to write that book. So finally, we went on a trip. And I, on that trip, I said, okay, now's the time. And I wrote the book. I wrote half the book during that trip, which was about a two-week trip, overlooking the water. And then I didn't touch the book again for probably another 9-10 months. And then I started diving in just weekly, and it took me probably another close to half a year. So ultimately, from idea to, and it's not a big book, it's a small little pocket book, idea to book in my hand literally today, it was a little over 2 years.
Well, that's actually, I don't know if you think that sounds like a long time or a short time, but it's not very long, especially if it's your first book. So, you know, I think 2 years is great. I actually didn't have a book right now, and it took me 2 years. well. So sometimes you just need time to Google. Like, it sounds like really you're the type of writer that needs to think about things in your head, then write it, then let it sit. And that's how I am as well. A lot of my writing time is actually not in front of the computer. I do a lot of my plotting while I'm commuting into Manhattan every day. And, you know, and that's what works for me. So in terms of your writing style, maybe you can tell us some of the mechanics. Is this written from the first person, the second person? And also, what genre would you characterize this book?
Yeah, so it's written from basically the second person. It's, you know, we're watching the two characters. And, you know, genre is a struggle for this because for those that have heard of the book The Alchemist or The Celestine Prophecy or The Monk Who Sold His Ferrari, these are all fictional parables. It's in that sort of vein. And it kind of gets hard to sort of describe the genre in some ways. I know today is kind of really the first day we started because it's pre-order right now. But again, I have books in my hand, but it's just starting the journey. And it was interesting today, somebody sent me a message and said it was working its way at the charts of metaphysical, which is not, you know, necessarily what I would categorize it as. But when I look, that's where The Alchemist is, and that's where Celestine is as well. So I guess that's where some people would put it. But for me, it's just really a fictional storytelling book that's told in more of a parable fashion. And it's, I guess the premise behind it is it's two passengers on a plane, old passenger, young passenger, and the young passenger asks for and makes sure and pays for the seat next to him so he'll be seated alone in first class, only to fall asleep and wake up next to an elderly gentleman beside him who tells him the plane was full and they bumped him up to first class. And the young guy doesn't want anything to do with the conversation until he finds that the old person is rich, and then he wants to know all about him. But what he doesn't expect is the elder person is going to teach him his journey, 10 insights, and he's going to share the insights based on what he's learned himself over the years. But it's really about how to become a rich person versus rich financially. So that's kind of that. I don't know if that sort of also helps with the genre, but I still struggle with the genre because it's almost like self-help fictional book that's loosely based on nonfiction. It's unique.
Well, you know, whatever works. If it's working on metaphysical, then hey, be metaphysical. That sounds great. And it sounds like a really interesting book. Now, maybe for people who aren't familiar with your speaking career, maybe you can tell us how, you know, what topics do you typically speak on and, you know, how does that link up with your book if it does?
So, yeah, I mean, it does and it doesn't. So what I typically spoke on for most of my speaking career has been more, I'll call it practical educational talks, like so stuff about customer service, how to create customer experiences, leadership, reading and adjusting to personality types. So in sales, how to read the personality type you're sitting across from so you can adjust accordingly. And so very practical educational type talks. But more recent years, again, with those interviews that I mentioned that I do, I've been more delving into, I guess we'll say, things like the law of attraction, the law of action, which I think is a completely separate law that works together with it. I've been delving into synchronicity and how to manifest. And so, you know, probably one of the things that kind of led me a bit down the path. Now, the book itself, like I say, it teaches a lot of the lessons that I would teach as a speaker. It's just delivered more in the story. Like when I'm speaking, I might talk about why we each need our own personal mission statement, just like a company has one. Or I might talk about the importance of saying no more than yes. The thought leaders I've interviewed, most of them say no 20 times more than the average person. And so I reveal those in the book, and those are things I would teach as a speaker as well. And so they link in that way. But I think the other thing that kind of pushed me in this direction too is a number of years back now, I mentioned the Celestine Prophecy. I started working with James Redfield, who wrote the Celestine, and we were working on a documentary about synchronicity and about his life, basically his teachings in his four main books. I was going around interviewing people similar to what they did with the Secret documentary, and the only thing that stalled it was COVID. But I think the process of doing that, like just on the journey of doing those interviews, I was seeing synchronicities, or what some people might call coincidences, or meaningful or mysterious coincidences, happening hourly that some people say would only happen once in their life. And so I think that kind of stuff also informed my desire to write a book like this, even though, again, the book, it does touch on synchronicity, but it's so much more than that. But I think that part of my life, the speaking and speaking on practical stuff mixed with working on a documentary about synchronicity, I think those things really, I guess, push the way for a book like this.
Now, well, that's very interesting background. Now, they often say that, especially in your first novel, that a lot of things are autobiographical. I know from my own first book, Gold Coast Wives, which actually was a very different book from the types of books that I write now, but that main character was very much like Bernadette at that time. I had a lot of my outward characteristics. Do you feel that either one of your main characters is like you, or has aspects like you, or maybe both of them do have different aspects of you? Or are they based, do you think, did a person in your life inspire them, or are they purely fictional?
So, well, this is a fascinating question because honestly, and this kind of sounds really strange, but when I first wrote the book, I never considered that. Like, I never thought, I knew that the older passenger had my journey mixed in there. Like, if I had interviewed somebody that might be a notable thought leader in the book, he was the one that talked to them. So I knew I put elements of my, let's say, story and experiences in there. But I never realized until it was written, and it was not even on the first read through, the second read through, it was when it was edited and I really sat back as a reader that I really, and I don't know how I didn't see this, but I finally clued in that I was both passengers. So I was the young passenger when I was younger. I didn't notice as much because I wasn't arrogant or standoffish, and this character was. But at the same time, he thought he knew it all. He didn't realize what there was out there to know. He didn't know that life can be about finding meaning. Like, I didn't know any of those things. And so I realized, and I was in business, and I sold photocopiers door to door. And in the story, this person he's the manager of a large printing company. So it's like right in there in the writing. And then the older passenger, the wise guy, if you will, he is like described as like a Wayne Dyer-esque sort of shaman. And I'm not there yet, but the journey, like him going and speaking on the road and meeting these certain thought leaders and what he learned backstage is really in a different format. It's what I've been learning. So Les Brown, who's known as kind of a legendary thought leader in the speaking world, I interviewed him in his house, in his living room in Atlanta, and I asked him about synchronicity. And he said, to me, synchronicity is God's way of staying anonymous. And so in the story, Les Brown shares that, but it's to the main character in the green room before they both go out and speak. So it's like the same story, but it's through the character's eyes. But again, I didn't really clue in how much I was really, basically the two characters are my transformation, essentially.
Now, did your wife or any of her friends, did they read drafts of the book? And did they realize that it was you before you did?
So I had a beta reader group of like maybe 35, 40 people. And there were comments like, for example, some people said, well, I knew it was based on your life once I saw that the character performed stand-up comedy. Like, they saw elements because they knew me, of me in the character. But the way I took it, again, it was so weird how I didn't notice it. The way I took it was they were just saying, I can see how you worked in some of your life into the story, but not the character. So I still didn't clue in. And I think they meant the character, but I still didn't clue in. And my wife, I told this to her probably 2 weeks ago. Like, that's how recent we're talking. And she said, yeah, of course. What do you mean? Yeah, of course there's two characters. So I guess
no,
she just assumed
I
realized that. Yeah, she assumed I realized it. And everybody made assumptions, I guess, is the takeaway from that.
Yeah. No, it's funny. And I've written 10 books at this point, and I'm still always surprised. Sometimes I'll pick up one of my older books and just to read it, just to see kind of where I've changed. And I always get a different reading. I was like, oh, wow. Like, that really reflects where I was and my headspace at that time. So one thing I wanted to ask you, obviously writing nonfiction, you're kind of using a different part of your brain than writing fiction. Did you feel that, so I guess one thing is, did you have a hard time making the transition from nonfiction to fiction?
So, I mean, the easy answer is to say, and I'll say the shortest answer is to say no. In fact, I probably, and again, it's another assumption, or not assumption, but another thing where I didn't really sit to think about it. But I think the transition was much easier than I thought it should be. But I didn't sit there and go, oh, wow, this is easier than I thought, because I didn't think this was going to be hard. I just sat down to write. But after I started writing, and then not even when the book was finished, but as I was kind of writing the book and I left it sit after that 2 weeks of writing, I was like, oh, that just flowed so effortlessly. So I think I was surprised without thinking about the fact that I was surprised that it all just kind of flowed. But now having said that, so the answer is, I guess, I wasn't super surprised because I hadn't really spent a whole lot of time thinking about it. Having said that, probably what helped make it possible is that I'm a songwriter. And so I wrote music since I was like age 12. And of course, songwriting, well, there's some parts that are fictional, some's nonfiction. You're not always right. Well, I don't always write about myself. Sometimes I write songs that don't reflect me at all, at least that I think of. And so I'm creating characters and I'm creating stories in a song. And so maybe that makes it a little easier because I already had been writing, I'll call it creatively, for in that capacity for probably 25, 30 years at that point.
Yeah, no, it sounds like even your nonfiction writing still had a lot of heart and emotion, as opposed to my story, which is my day job is I'm a lawyer. And when I first started writing, my first attempt at a book was about as exciting as a contract. I say that all the time. It was terrible. It was terrible. And I had to almost learn how to use that other side of my brain because I knew I wanted to say and I knew I had emotions to say, but they were coming out very, very dry. And so what I did was I typically write from the first person, and that allows me as a writer to really get into the heart of my characters, right, and really speak from their point of view so they're not spouting off, you know, contract terms. So that's how I kind of made the transition over from one type of writing to the other. But it's even still sometimes if I can't, like, come home from work and start writing. Like, I have to really change my brain, you know what I mean, and kind of – let the others, you know, let my real life go dissipate a little bit before I can get into my writing life. But anyway, that's how it works for me.
Can appreciate that.
Yeah. Do you feel that, or were you surprised by the fact in your writing, do you think you exposed more of yourself than you do in your nonfiction writing?
No, but the reason is because I fully expose a lot of myself in my nonfiction writing. So my last nonfiction book that I wrote start to finish myself, because I've been involved in, we have a separate brand, so we release anthology books with multiple writers. But my last book that I wrote start to finish myself is called The Book of Why and How. And that book, my writing style, which I discovered a while back, is a very raw, vulnerable style. So it's not like, because of the style of writing in the Book of Why, I'm talking about how I found my why and things like that. But I'm writing things like about my first night performing stand-up comedy, how I told two jokes without realizing I didn't have the mic turned on, and then talking about being covered in sweat on those first things and going for a year without one laugh. Like literally going performing every week for a year, stand-up comedy, which is supposed to be about laughs, and getting zero laughs. So I think I, for years now, I've been revealing that side of myself as a speaker. So then when it came to writing, I think it was natural to just reveal whatever came to the surface. But having said that, I think in this book, I'm not revealing as much of myself. So like, again, where I didn't realize I was the two characters, the young character obviously has some flaws, but in the course of a flight, a 6-hour flight, you don't get to see a whole lot of those flaws. So I actually think this book required me to reveal less of myself than most of my nonfiction books did.
That's really interesting. Now that you've written this book, do you think you'll write other books? And do you think you'll go in the same type of vein, or are you going to explore other genres? Or is it too soon to tell?
No, it's definitely not too soon to tell. A little behind this, the story behind the story, which I didn't see coming, is that I wrote this book And it's like I wrote it as a solo book. It's finished. You know, it ended the way it was supposed to end. Everything was done. And then I was flying to the UK for our events that we run. And I had, like, I forget, you know, whatever it is, 12 hours overnight or something, and multiple flights. And so I had a long time in the flight, and then both ways. And then at the same time, I was going to be at the hotel. I can't remember the reason, but I had to stay at the hotel for like a day. Just like I was waiting for a package or something. I can't remember what it was, but it was basically I had three full days where I could finally squeeze in some writing. And without even intentionally, I guess I'll say, doing it, the second book in what this is, which really is not meant to be designed to be promoted as a series right now, but the second book in this with these characters, which is it's kind of wild. It's totally a different take on the book. It's a different character, but it's one of the characters' partners. So it's like these characters are still in it, but they're through the other person's lens, and that one's mm-hmm. from a first person. But it's actually the second book in what I'll call the Enlightened series. And then what's really fascinating to me is then about a month and a half, 2 months after that, took another trip to the UK and then wrote the third book. So it's actually a trilogy, and it's fully written. The other two books are done. But I'm ignoring them for now. Pretend they don't exist. But yes, there's two more books. So I know I'll continue down this path.
That's great. That's great. Well, sometimes the characters keep talking to you. I've had that experience as well, where I wrote a novella and I was like, oh, this is just a throwaway. And it turned into a four book, you know, series. And when it was done, I was like, okay, now the story's been told. So sometimes, like you said, sometimes those characters just keep knocking on your door. And so you have to open the door, right? And let them out, let them see the light of day. So that sounds very exciting. So you have this, so you're going to call the series the Enlightened series. Is that it?
I think so. It's each one is about a different character. And so it's each one, I already know what the title is. They all have different, the Enlightened ... but I'm just thinking myself as a kind of, I'll call it just a place hanger title for the series. It would just be the Enlightened series, because they all have the Enlightened part in the title. It's just they each are in different people that are enlightened. So it's like a different ones, like around a profession. So as an example would be like the Enlightened lawyer could be an example. It's not a lawyer, but it could be the Enlightened lawyer as an example. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, which is really fascinating, I'll say this now. I mean, that third book might be six, seven years from now. But I'll say what's really fascinating to me is when I wrote them, it was really important to me that it wasn't just like part two and part three. Because, you know, it's like movie sequels. You always get the thing where if one does really well or is received really well, then it's like a decline almost. Like I can't think of many series where the third is viewed as better than the first. And so I wanted this to be unique enough that it would be viewed as its own thing. And so, like I said, the second one is one of the characters' partners in life, like so spouse. And then the third one is about a grandchild. But what's really wild is the first one is in the second person. The second one is in the first person. And the third one is actually in the first people. So two characters, and they each share their perspective back and forth. So like if I was talking to the other person, I'm thinking about something while I'm talking to them. You hear my thoughts, but then it switches perspectives back and forth. So each book has their own unique approach, I guess I'll call it.
Well, it sounds very ambitious. So you started out not being a reader even, and now you're writing all these books and you can't seem to stop with the series. Have you, now that you started writing, have you started reading more, and has being a writer changed the way you read?
So yes and yes. I am a voracious, I guess would be the word, reader. Like I'm on this trip right now, and when I got in, the first thing I unpacked, and I don't necessarily think it was just intentional, I unpacked it first, but the first thing I grabbed, because I have multiple ones on the trip with me, was a book. And I read like every type of thing. Like I read, like I said, The Alchemist and Celestine Prophecy are fictional parables. And I've read, especially the Celestine has the 10th insight, the 11th and 12th. So it's four different books. I've read them all multiple times. And then at the same time, the book that's sitting here right in front of me right now is a book I just bought called Exit Rich by Michelle Seiler Tucker, I guess is her name, and Sharon Lecter. And basically it's about how to, when you build your business, how to sell it in the best way, like to have a legacy that continues for maximum profitability. And so, you know, that's a totally different spin than what I just said about the Celestine. but we have a company that at some point down the road will probably sell. And so I'm always thinking about how can we make sure that we're doing the right things now. And so the short answer to that is I get most of my, I'll say content or ideas or insight from books. And so now it's not every month, but it would not be abnormal for me to maybe read 5 books in a month.
So for all those teachers out there who complain about kids not reading, remember that people find their path when they find it, right? So it's, you know, I've always been a big reader, but I know some people come to it. I have a family member who was never a reader as a kid, and now is belong to like 3 different book clubs. So people find it when they find it. So I think that's a really great story. Now, maybe you could tell us a little bit. I know you're in town in New York doing a whole lot of promo. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what you're doing to promote the books and maybe where people can find you online.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's one of the things that's important to me, Bernadette, is that I don't want this to be passing in the night book. I have so many people, and I understand why, but I have a lot of people in my network that their goal is to have a best-selling book so that they can leverage that in their bio for their career, whether it's a business, whether they're a coach or what have you. And I get it. And so then they really just kind of set it and forget it. They put the book out, they push it to bestseller, or somebody helps them push it to bestseller, and then they say, okay, moving on. And I didn't want this book to be that. I mean, if I was going to do that, I would write a nonfiction book around, let's say, how to get paid to speak or something. And so this book was totally meant to be a different thing, meant to be a mass market book that reaches lives over and over. And so I will say that some of the things we're doing right now are intended so that the book has a life after the launch. And so, for example, we are going to be, you mentioned book club. That's what made me think of this. We're going to be launching a book club, and we're already actually building up the waiting list. I think we have about 120 people so far on it. And we're building up a waiting list so that after the book is out, a big challenge you run into is people then don't read it. As you know, like the numbers are pretty low, like something like only 20% of people make it past the first chapter that actually buy a book. And so I feel the book club, because we're going to do it for our book first, and then it might continue after that. It's a way to have people continually read the book and tell other people about it. So we do have things like that, because you said, what do you have on the go in terms of helping the book get out to the world? The second thing is more current stuff. And so, yes, I'm in New York now. This Friday, I'm going to be at the Times Square NASDAQ billboard, and the book's going to be featured there. I'm speaking at Columbia University, at our event at Columbia, on Thursday. I'm going to be on Pix 11 TV, which is one of the big stations in New York here. And
Channel
11. and I was on ABC, well, I'm on ABC, sorry, tomorrow morning. And then I'm also, that's ABC Syracuse, but that one's a Zoom versus in-person in studio. And then I do a TED Talk in Alabama, and of course I'll be promoting the book while I'm there. And then also I'm going to Indianapolis to go on Wish TV. So that's like kind of the next 7 days. And then I go to Miami after I get back home. I'm home for 2 days, go to Miami, and then be doing some media there as well for the book. But as far as how people can find me and what that looks like, so the book itself, what we've done is we put it available on a website called This Is The Book. So meaning like this is the book you need to get. So thisisthebook.com. And when you go there, it still tells you step one is to go buy the book at any of your preferred retailer. So it's the same as if you go online right now and buy it at Staples or Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Walmart or Target. But the difference is if you go through our website, it takes you through 3 quick steps. One of them is go buy the book. The other one is to come back to the page and put in an order number. And the benefit of doing that is that you then get 5 free gifts that we're giving away. And we can't give the gifts away if you buy through Walmart, let's say. But it allows us to know who's grabbing the book. And on the side of the reader, it allows them to get some free bonuses, and they literally pay the exact same price because they're going to the same retailer. We just provide the link, and they go to whatever they prefer. So that was a long way to say thisisthebook.com is where people can find this book.
Okay. And where can people find information about you? Are you on Instagram or Facebook, anything
yeah.
like that?
I mean – the tendency is to say I'm on all the places, but I know, you know, nobody's on all the places, I would say. But I'm on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and TikTok. And that's on the book side, that's new. I've just been hearing a lot of good about TikTok for getting the word out about a book. So I'm giving it a go and we'll see what happens. And then I'm on X, formerly Twitter, but I'm not active there. So that's, I mean, I'm on some of those places, but the most active, I'm most active on LinkedIn and Facebook and now TikTok. And I'm going to get more active on Instagram because, again, I think it's really a natural fit for the book. So those two areas, I'm going to be delivering a lot more stuff because of the fact that the book's out. So I would say you can find me in those places. And my handle on most of those places is That Speaker Guy. So That Speaker Guy. Or if you just type in Corey Poria, you'll find me as well. And so those are kind of the main places. I have a website as well, but really if you go to the website, the best way to communicate, it's still going to bring you back to the social media pages.
Well, all I can say is that I'm very, very grateful that you took some time to speak to Fearless Fiction. It seems like we have a lot of illustrious company for all the places that you're promoting the book. So I'm glad that you took time out of your day to speak to us. So I really do appreciate it. And if you could please let me know or maybe even like the Fearless Fiction Facebook page because I like to update people on our speakers. And so if you have anything, any new books coming out, would love to let people know about that. So that's easy enough to find. Again, Fearless Fiction with Bernadette Walsh. So Corey, thank you so much.
Awesome.
It's really exciting to hear about your writing journey. And it seems like we're going to be hearing from you from quite some more. This is a trilogy. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a 4-book, 5-book series. You never know. So it sounds like you're really on a roll. So I really do appreciate you speaking with me today. It was great to meet you.
Oh, likewise. Thanks so much, Bernadette. So appreciate it.
Okay, great. So everyone, again, I would like all of you to like the Facebook page for Fearless Fiction, again, to stay up to date on all of our speakers. You can also sign up for my newsletter at BernadetteWalsh.com. Again, that gives you all the information about my podcast speakers and also my books. And if you sign up, you will get a free copy of my latest book, A Safe Distance. In addition, I want to remind you that Friends Forever is on sale for a very limited time for only $1.99. And again, that's about two college roommates who get into a lot of trouble. So anyway, I appreciate everyone joining. This is Bernadette Walsh, Fearless Fiction, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.